That's weird. That's weird. Kind of weary me out.
You are a sad, strange little man.
This is crazy!
Isn't that weird?
That's weird, man.
It's strange.
What's up, campers? Welcome back to episode 143 of Camp Strange. I am your camp counselor, Alex Tobin. And David Stokes could not be here tonight because he's moving. But we have a replacement. You know her. You love her. I love her more. My girlfriend. Yes, I have a girlfriend. Katie.
Hi, it's me. I'm back.
Yeah, I didn't want to give away your full name just in case there's any hitman out there or something like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, David could not be here this week, so we have a replacement, but it's not a replacement. It's an upgrade, actually. So, but we got to catch you up. I'm supposed to say my intro, which is welcome back. I'm David. I don't remember what I say anymore.
Spooky, wacky, weird, strange.
Yeah, I'm just trying to lead into that. But spooky, wacky, weird, strange, and Olympic. And before we get into these longer stories we have for you today, we got to catch you up on any of the weird news you may have missed. And I was just smitten just moments ago when Katie was trying to find some news stories because she said none of these news stories are funny and then proceeded to tell me about she was just really mad and she's going, this is fucked up. It's just like, dog chases after man after getting its leg chopped off. And I thought it was just the funniest stuff ever. And it's not funny to chop off a dog leg, but just like thinking that somebody made that as a news article.
But also when you look up funny news, that's one of the ones that comes up. So I don't understand how I got from point A to point B, but.
Well, speaking of funny news, Maryland man charged with sending twisted death threats to Anthony Fauci. Okay, this is my favorite. So apparently this guy, 56-year-old Maryland man Thomas Patrick Canale Jr., I guess the FBI has, they're going after him because of emails he's been sending Dr. Fauci ever since, I think the first one was in December when he said, like, watch out for the holiday surge. And he proceeded to send him an email that read, this is so funny, maybe not if you're Anthony Fauci, but it says, Dear Anthony Fauci, and he starts with dear, which is so just great. Mm-hmm. Every time I see your sickening elf visage, I literally, subject line, hope you get a bullet in your compromised satanic elf skull today.
Okay. Interesting, descriptive, paints a picture, got it.
Every time I see your, dear Anthony Fauci, every time I see your sickening elf visage, I literally get sick. You are a lying sack of shit, all the way back to your bullshit HIV scam. You are a sickening, compromised, satanic, Freemason criminal, and I hope you get a rope around your vile elf neck and a bullet in your disgusting elf face tonight. Why does this guy have something to get elves?
You know why? It's the holiday season. This was in December.
Oh, you're right. He has elves on the mind.
Yeah.
Anti-elf.
Maybe okay. Elf on the shelf.
Oh, that thing's very similar to Gary. It's just more haunted, actually, if I have to say. Here's the thing. Gary has not moved since we brought him here, has he not?
Well, besides earthquake, he was like only thing that moved during an earthquake.
It is true. Gary fell during an earthquake, and that was the only thing that fell in our apartment. So he was trying to move. But I'm just saying, elf on the shelf just roaming around the house.
I think he might leave notes.
He's in funny poses. Anyway, we call him Anthony. If you get one this year, just call him Anthony Fauci. Because apparently he has a very strong elf visage. And then he continues his, hope someone takes a baseball bat to your dirty lying elf skull and puts you out of your misery, you sickening, vile piece of criminal dog shit.
It's interesting that he hopes this happens to him, but he's not at all saying he's going to do it.
No.
He's just putting it in the universe, if you will.
Yeah, it's the, what's that book called? The message. What did Oprah, when you like visualize something and it comes true, the word, it's the something, the secret.
Oh,
the
I don't
secret.
Know.
The secret. That's like where you like think of something and it like it's supposed to come true. I don't know. I haven't done it, and working for me, obviously. And then, yeah, he kept sending him stuff, and he said, "You are disgusting. You and your disgusting wife and daughters are getting 6 mandatory shots in their disgusting pig snouts while you watch."
Wait, they're pigs, but he's an elf.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's how nature works. You don't get it. Right. You and your entire family will be dragged into the street, beaten to death, and set on fire. You're a liar and fraud, and I'll call you a mass murderer. You get the death penalty. Con artist. You disgusting fucking elf. So he just like...
And that one's from later.
Oh, yeah. He's been sending them for a while. That's why the FBI is like, okay, one's funny, and now he's anti-elf and anti-Fauci. Just, you know, it's too much going on. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was so crazy. I mean, like... I think it's always, you know, you always see that thing where it's like, you can't make a death threat against the president, you know, like the FBI show up at your front door and stuff like that. It's in that Tim Robinson sketch, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think people just go like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. But like, it is a thing. Like, this guy, he was probably sending these to like an email that just gets random emails. Like, it's a Dr. Fauci, like, informational, like, you can send it in. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll read it. It's going through 4 assistants first, but like, he sent enough to get on the radar,
and right?
That's I mean, you're just asking for trouble at that point.
Yeah. I don't know, I guess you just kind of get wrapped up in it's like he's a celebrity now, so
oh yeah, for sure
he gets that attention as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I feel like he's gonna be around for a while. I mean, Delta variants and stuff like that. You know, everything that's going on. I feel like Fauci's just gonna be like the new guy. You know what I mean? There's gonna be like the new president, and then Fauci's just unless they replace him. I like him though. He's a cute little elf. But that's my story. I hope he has a long life with no baseball bats and pig snouts and, you know, all Agreed. That stuff. What do you got?
So for my first news story here, this is from Dublin, Ireland, it looks like. A shop bans customers from paying with cash stashed in bras during heat wave.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this is a mattress shop.
Wait, why? Who's buying a mattress cash?
I don't know.
Are Dublin mattresses cheap?
Well, I think that they also have, maybe they have bedding as well.
You just sleep on a... Oh.
Peanut Gallery chiming in.
We got cats down here.
Anyway, so he... is apparently known as Mattress Mick, the salesman or owner of this shop. And he became so fed up with customers paying with cash that has been stashed in their bras that he went to the effort of writing a note on a poster and putting it outside his store, and then also posting on Facebook and saying that it was an urgent alert.
Well, it's crazy because I didn't think anybody stored any cash. I thought that was like a thing in movies. You know, like when like a girl's like he tips the girl and she like puts in her bra while she's chewing some gum and she's like, "Yeah, no problem. I'll make sure you get to the front of the line." Or like, you know, she's like a cool girl. She's like a cool chick that puts money in her bra, right? That's not unless you're Irish and sweaty, right?
Apparently. So, yeah, I don't know. He just wanted to stop the quote-unquote unsanitary habit, you know, with everything that's going on. Don't need to add any more germs, I guess.
You know, it's weird. There's a guy out there who's like that's his thing.
He wants
sweaty boob money.
He has the opposite sign in his store window. It says, "Only pay with bra cash."
Yeah, and he's opening up a mattress store as we speak.
Next door to this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that weird? Mattress stores actually work like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard a lot of conspiracy theories about how they're just like fronts and...
I mean,
because like, how often does one buy a mattress?
Every...
They say like, what, 6 years or something?
I was going to say 8 to 10. Is that wrong? I still have underwear from 2020, I almost said 2020, 2000, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They got Spider-Man on them.
I like holes in mine. I like it. I like mine looking like a Stanley Yelnats dirt lot.
Okay.
I couldn't think of a measurement that somebody would dig a hole in, but acre. It was a word I was looking for. Okay. But yeah, you know, it's just very interesting because mattress stores, I think, are maybe fronts for something, but I don't know what they. I don't even know how a front works. If that makes any sense,
I have no idea.
No, so many things I don't know. But
I actually realized that my second story is a great follow-up to my first. Okay. Do you mind if I go two in a row?
Go for it. Do it.
So, this is also in the UK, in Essex, England. Mum gets note from neighbor saying, quote, "My kids don't want to see your ass out."
What?
So, apparently she's been walking around in her house, windows, you know, blinds open, and, you know, has been in, like, a t-shirt in her panties, or sometimes is just naked. So the neighbor across the street said to shut your blinds when walking naked.
This is another problem I have. Why is everybody just trying to make the world, like, less fun, you know?
But also,
Boob money, naked neighbors.
I feel like this woman definitely has bra cash.
Oh, yeah. Well, no bra. Just cash.
Who knows where it is?
It's sweaty, though. That's for sure. But, no, I mean, that's so... I mean, okay, here's the thing. If it was, like, a creepy old fat naked man that was constantly... If you guys hear stuff in the background, that's our fucking cats, and they're going ballistic right now. Because Katie's usually playing ringleader right now, and I'm doing the podcast, and they occasionally come out here and scream. But right now, they're, like, jumping in bags. One's on top of the record player right now.
They're very confused about what's going on, so disregard them.
Oh, my God. They hate this medium. They're big YouTubers, and they fucking hate podcasts. I forgot what I was going to say, but, oh, yeah, if it was, like, a fat, naked man, I'd be like, this is so wrong. Like, put some blinds up. But it's kind of the phenomenon of, like, the hot teacher who's sleeping with their student, where everyone's like, oh, yeah, like, hot lady, like, walking naked around, that's fine, you know? Like, teacher is sleeping with the young people, that's fine. And then, like, a guy does it, and everyone's like, this is disgusting, you're a creep. And I'm like, I agree with that, but it's like... I don't know the point I'm getting at, but
I don't either.
No, it's interesting how, like, you know, you know, I think a lot of people would be like, oh, why are you freaking out? It's just a naked woman in a window. Like, that's fine. But, like, if that was a guy, everybody would be like, fuck this.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. So, I just want to see what this lady looks like for scientific purposes.
Okay.
You had a picture?
Yeah, there's a couple. She's definitely
Okay.
Someone you probably wouldn't mind.
Oh, she's like she got some Botox-y lips.
She has definitely work done, as they would say in, I guess, England. But I know from Love Island she looks like she's from Essex.
Oh, yeah. Katie's a big UK media frenzy girl. What am I talking? Okay, that's enough. No, Katie loves anything UK. Love Island, Taskmaster.
Those are kind of the big ones.
Soccer. No. Football.
Not so much.
Mr. Bean.
Mm-mm.
Anything. The Royal Wedding.
Can't say I caught it.
Okay, she's a fan of a couple. One Direction.
That was true.
It was. Okay.
I guess they're not around anymore.
You're right, but if they were.
If they were.
But yeah, so, okay, well, I'm moving to England, Essex, more specifically, but my next news story is one I'm very fond of because I've been following this, not like closely, but it's been on my radar for a very long time, since 2005, actually, and there's been an update as Wu-Tang Clan album sale pays off Martin Scorsese's court debt. So, if you guys don't know, in 2005, the Wu-Tang Clan, you know them, they're a popular hip-hop group from New York, and, you know, Wu-Tang Clan had nothing to fuck with, and they created this album that was 33 songs, I believe, and it was one press. There's only one of it. It was encased in a metal box that was like nickel and iron and I forget, like all these different types of metal and everything like that. And they wanted to sell it because they wanted it to be viewed as like a piece of art. So it was also sold with like a 177-page leather-bound book. I don't know what's in the book. I don't know if they say it like publicly. But basically, they wanted this all to be sold as one entity together. And they put it up for auction. And as we all know, Martin Shkreli back in 2015, we called him, I think everybody called him like Pharma Bro. But basically, he bought this pharmaceutical drug. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but it had to do with HIV and parasites. I'm looking it up. I can't remember, but basically he like jacked this price up like 5,000% or something crazy like that and made it from like $5 to like $85. And then like everyone hated him, and then he also got caught with like committing fraud. So he went to prison for 7 or 8 years, I believe. And he had to pay a bunch of money back, $7.4 million. And I guess he's already paid back $5 million of it through other funds, but he still had to pay $2 million left. So the government seized that album from him, and the government auctioned it off to a secret buyer. They said they didn't have to, part of the contract was they didn't have to like tell who bought it. Mm-hmm. And so the album has been passed from Martin Shkreli to somebody else. But the thing is, the buyer in the contract, it's hard to say if the contract will go to the new buyer because Martin Shkreli is the one who signed the contract with Wu-Tang. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. But it says that you can't release the album for 88 years to the public. And only a few people have ever heard the album.
Oh.
Yeah. So like Martin Shkreli, whoever wants like... he could show it to people in person, but he can't post it anywhere. He can't like let people borrow it. It's like, it's part of these like stipulations and stuff. And, for those who don't know, there's also these really weird, stipulations that come with the album. Like I said, 88 years, but also there's a clause that says, that the buying party also agrees that at any time during the stipulated 88-year period, the seller, who is Wu-Tang, the Wu-Tang Clan, may legally plan and attempt to execute one heist or caper to steal back Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, the album, which, if successful, would return all ownership rights to the seller. Said heist or caper can only be undertaken by currently active members of the Wu-Tang Clan and or actor Bill Murray, with no legal repercussions.
What? How fun is that?
Because the RZA, is it the RZA or the GZA? The RZA is friends with Bill Murray because I think they did a movie together, so like they know each other. Mm. So I think he just threw that in there because Bill Murray is kind of one of those like iconic, weird, legendary figures that like people don't know. I don't know if I told anybody this story on the podcast. But he's kind of one of those figures that you go like, he'll show up at like a wedding or like, you know, people on Reddit are like, he showed up at my wedding or he was walking by and he took a picture with us. And he notoriously like doesn't carry a cell phone with him, so he's hard to get a hold of. And I guess I'll tell this story real quick because I just thought it was one of my like coolest moments, but it wasn't even that cool. You know what I'm going to say, right?
Yes.
Okay. So one time I was in a meeting with an old boss and I was just basically taking notes for him because he was trying to get this new show off the ground and he was going to pitch it. And one of the people in the room, there were five or six people in the room. And one of the people in the room was Bobby Farrelly, who is one of the Farrelly brothers, who famously wrote and directed Dumb and Dumber, Shallow Hal, Me, Myself, and Irene, Something About Mary, all those movies. And Bobby Farrelly was sitting there when I was taking notes. They were talking amongst themselves, and then his phone went off. Bobby's phone went off, and everyone's like, "Oh!" And he's like, "Oh!" And he's like, "Oh, I'm not gonna take this." And he looked down. And he's like, "Oh, I gotta take this, guys." And he puts the phone up to his ear, and he goes, "Hey, what's up?" And he's just kind of silent there, and everyone's just kind of talking amongst themselves. And I was kind of like watching him, and he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm not in Boston. No, I'm actually just like, you know, I'm in LA right now." And he's like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "When I get back, yeah, for sure, we'll grab a drink." Yeah, blah blah blah. Okay, yeah, cool. Okay, talk to you soon. Okay, bye. And he hangs up, and everybody in the room, like the four or five other people, look over at him, he's like, oh, really? You had to take that? And then he goes, he looks at him and he goes, well, it's not like I'm not going to answer the phone when Bill Murray calls me.
I remember when you told me that and it was so crazy.
Yeah.
Like, of all people, and especially, like, you hear the phone call and you're like, oh, this is just, like, an old friend or something. Like, people just catching up. Mm-hmm. And it's like you really stopped like a business meeting for a, like a personal phone call.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're like, oh, whoa, it's so crazy.
And it's cool because like I could kind of like hear his muffled voice through the mm-hmm. phone, and I didn't know who it was. So I was just like,
it's like secondhand.
It's stardom. You didn't
talk to him,
mm-hmm.
but you like heard his muffled voice.
That's why I say it's like it's not cool. It's like the coolest uncool story.
Right, right.
Like I didn't see him. I didn't meet him. It just like I was like, oh, I was next to a phone call that he was on, which is so stupid. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I was like, oh shit, that's mm-hmm. so cool. But
yeah, so Bill Murray or one of the current active Wu-Tang Clan members can steal it back, but they can only try once. That's crazy. How do we know if they've already tried or not?
That's the thing. I mean, I feel like they
probably just saved it for just for a rainy day.
I mean, like realistically
they weren't gonna do it.
I mean, maybe though.
But maybe.
But like, what would happen? Like, what if he just like they showed up at a park and this guy was like, I'm gonna do like a listening party at like New York, a park in New York, and then they showed up and they just started beating the shit out of them.
Jesus.
This guy who just bought it for $2 million and they steal it from him. And then he's like, I legally can't do anything. Like,
yeah, it is interesting.
It's assault.
Yeah, the assault part would definitely be against the law. But if they have a contract that says that I can try to steal this back from you, then like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but.
I mean, a lawyer's going to be like, that was pretty cool. I'm going to drop the charges, but I don't know if it would actually happen. It's just kind of a fun little thing to put in the
mm-hmm.
clause. But I mean, it'd be really, really cool to hear that album. There's like 33 songs, and somebody described it as like being like the intro is like thunder and rain, and then it comes in with like Ghostface Killah rapping. And I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. And it's like, they say they described it as like one of their earlier albums, and I'm a Wu-Tang fan, so that would be so cool to hear that. But 88 years, I can wait. That was 2000.
Well, when was it?
2015.
2005.
No, 15. 2015.
It came out in 15.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So only like almost 80 more years left. I'll be like 110. That's fine.
82. Wait.
Something like that.
80, what year is this? Yeah.
I'll be like 110, 111. I'll wait.
Yeah.
I can wait.
Exactly.
Anyway, we should probably get into these stories, right?
Of course.
Before we bore you guys with all this Wu-Tang and Bill Murray talk. Yeah, right. That's the only stuff I actually want to listen to. So, anyway, let's get into these stories because mine's kind of sad, but interesting. So,
Can't wait.
Let's do it. Now, Katie, something I've noticed just in the general zeitgeist of the media world is that people are drawn to unsolved true crime cases. Am I correct?
I'm going to go ahead and say yes.
Yes. So documentary after book after Facebook theory page after podcast just usually pop up on the weekly and with a new unsolved case. As an audience, we are drawn to the cases for many reasons, I believe. Some for the morbid curiosity of the case, while others for the thrill of the clue hunting and puzzle solving. But usually, and sadly, many of these cases are never solved because of either the passage of time, the lack of evidence, or the lack of interest. Today, though, I would like to tell you about the most well-known unsolved case in all of France's history, or should I say, French's history, that still plagues the mind of the population to this day. As today, we discuss the murder of Gregory Villemin. So, I am not French, people. So, there are a lot of French names in this story. So, I can even try to... I'm going to give it my French best, you know? But
Villemin.
What?
Villemin. I don't know how
Villemin. No, see that word doesn't.
Would they say men?
I don't know. See, here's the thing. There's more French sounding names in this, so I mean we're fine.
That's true.
But give it my go. So, At 5 p.m. on October 16th, 1984, Christine Villamin. Christine Villamin was finishing up her ironing for the next day as her four-year-old son, Gregory Villamin, played out in the front yard in the little French town of L'Épinay-sur-Vologne. That was something.
It probably sounded
pretty
French.
Wrong. So Christine's husband, Jean-Marie Villamin, was not home from work yet, which meant that four-year-old Gregory was outside playing in the front yard, alone. As Christine finished her chores and went outside to check on Gregory, she began to panic. The spot where the little wool-hat-wearing Gregory was sitting was now empty. Christine immediately began searching the perimeter of the house, but quickly expanded her search just after a few minutes, jumping into her car and frantically patrolling the small village. So, I mean, I feel like there's no lag time between, like, a parent being like, oh, I wonder where my four-year-old is. I feel like they go, where is this kid? I'm immediately, like, getting in my car, or, like, you're sprinting. There's no, like, walking around the house. It's a sprint around the house and then speeding in the car. Like, it's probably the scariest feeling ever. You know what I mean?
As a mother myself. To two.
I hear him crying all around here.
Loving children.
Mm-hmm.
When our older cat was a kitten still. Well, but she was, like, old enough to know. Mm-hmm. She might have been one at this point.
Oh, they're always old enough to know.
But I, like, put her food out or something, and she would always run, and I realized I hadn't seen her much that day. So then I was like, wait a minute. Like, where is she? So I checked her, you know, go-to spots, under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
In the closet. In the closet, etc. You know. They have
all
their,
the places cats will hide.
Mm-hmm, they have their go-tos.
Oh, yeah, you.
That one.
Yep, you.
So.
Are you standing on my album?
Then I got worried.
Get off my John Mayer album. Sorry, continue.
So then I, you know, immediately was worried. So I ran all over the house and did not find her. And I was calling her and I was, like, shaking treats, like, hoping she'd come out if she was somewhere, and no luck. And we had previously lost a cat that had snuck out and never came back. So this was a little bit triggering, if you will.
Yep.
So then I started walking around our neighborhood, and I'm, like, crying, and, you know, it was a rough maybe 10-15 minutes. And then I was looking again inside in my room, and I had a TV box.
Oh shit, that's right.
That I was keeping because I was planning to move soon, and so I was like, oh, I'll just throw the TV back in the box when I go to move. And right when I moved that, she was just laying behind the TV box because there was a little space between it and the wall. And
That's the classic story of, like, the little kid in the closet being like, haha, I was hiding, you found me.
Or, like, in the store as a kid.
Yeah.
In Mervyn's, back when Mervyn's existed.
Shit, I hid in so many middle racks of Mervyn's.
My mom had to lock down Mervyn's one time because my younger sister was hiding.
When's the last time you saw a circular rack at a thrift store? Or a thrift store, a convenience. Well, what the fuck are those things called?
They're just a department store.
There we go.
Yeah, they don't make them the same anymore.
They don't rock the circular stack anymore where you could hide in the middle.
Anyway,
it's not the same.
But to say all of that was just to say, I bet it's really terrifying because me just not knowing where my cat was for 15 minutes was enough to make me cry.
This story is not as happy as you finding your cat, but we'll get into it.
Great.
So it wasn't long after that Christine called the police and reported her son missing, but it would only be about an hour before the family received their first clue of what actually happened. At 6 p.m., little Gregory's uncle, Michael Villamin, informed the family he had just received an anonymous call. The caller on the other line spoke in a strange voice and said, "I have taken the boy." The caller also told the family to look in the Volongne River before hanging up. Police sprang into action, and just a few hours later, at 9 p.m., Gregory's body was found about 4.5 miles away in the Volongne River, with his hands and feet bound with rope and his woolen hat pulled down over his face. Gregory had been murdered by drowning, they suspect. I know, it's really, really sad. Like I said, it's the story is like, it's always really hard when there's like a, you know, a child or like, everyone's kind of innocent when in all these stories, but like it's really hard when like you, when we all are like that, like animals, children, you know, that kind of stuff. If they're like an adult, we're like, we kind of compartmentalize it in our head and be like, oh, they were murdered, but like adults are murdered, and then it's like kid and you're like, fuck. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the stuff that's about to happen is very interesting. The fallout.
I had no idea where you were going. Anyway,
I don't, when I start a sentence, I just try to figure it out along the way, like Michael Scott. So the family was devastated, of course, as was the entire community. But full of grief or not, the police began their search for the murderer. At first, suspicions fell onto the father, Jean-Marie, as he was not home at the time of the kidnapping. But the idea soon became more and more unlikely as the family began to explain what had been happening to them over the past 4 years. So this is where things get really weird, or very interesting. So, you see, the Villeman family all lived nearby in the same village. Parents, aunts, uncles, brothers, cousins, all within walking distance to each other. That's...
You've never said aunts before in your whole life.
I know. I feel like it was very French of me.
Okay.
Aunts.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I bet that's the French word for it.
But I know, I'm usually an aunt guy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, is your aunt over? Is she in front of the window naked? You know, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
Yes.
Can I come to Essex with you? With.
With.
So, now you threw me off because of all the ant talk. But like I said, all within walking distance of each other, which is a nightmare in itself. I do not want to live that close to any family members. I mean, I love my family, for sure. But, like, I don't want to be, like, walking in the street and get pulled into a 45-minute long conversation about Thanksgiving or something like that. So, but some were too close for comfort, because 3 years earlier, Jean-Marie Valamin, at the age of 26, had been promoted to foreman at the car parts factory where he worked, and that made some family members very unhappy.
Were they jealous or something?
I don't, see, here's the thing. I think with a small village like this, I bet most people worked at this car parts factory.
Oh, and maybe, like, he had family members working there, and then now maybe mm-hmm. he's like the boss of them.
That's what I'm thinking of. Or like people are like, you, like, it's jealousy, like, you shouldn't have been promoted, I should have been promoted. Or like, that's the only reason that makes sense.
Or like, I worked there for 25 years and I was never foreman,
and that's still jealousy, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it has to be jealousy. And once you get into it, it'll be pretty clear to see that it is. So ever since the promotion, he and Christine had been plagued by anonymous phone calls from a person clearly familiar with details of their lives that only relatives could know. So that's really weird. Like, how big is your family? You're not like, Eric, is that you on the phone? I fucking know it's you, Eric. Like, you know what I mean? Like, people, unless they're using like that little alien voice, you know, like we get that little alien, you switch it to monster or alien, and he's like talking on the phone with that thing, is switching his voice. But like, how do you not know that this is like one of your family members?
I don't know. I mean, I'm someone with a very small family, so I can't relate.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe they were just like disguising their voice a little bit.
Could
more.
Could be like a second cousin.
Exactly.
We don't talk about him.
Or like it's some guy who's feeding information to somebody else, and like you do the voice or something. Yeah. Like they get
team effort.
Yeah, they get drunk with their buddy. Yeah, I hate my cousin. Leave him this shitty phone call. So like I said, they were getting plagued with anonymous phone calls from a person clearly familiar with them. The Villemans alerted the police and began recording the calls, whereupon they stopped. the calls, that is. And that's when the letters started. So this guy or girl really wanted to get the message to them. He's like, the police are aware of these phone calls now. I'm going to start writing letters. And mm-hmm. that's like so much more effort just to be like, how much do you hate somebody that you would send them a letter? I mean, people do it.
I wonder if they like cut out the letters in like magazines or newspapers.
Oh, they did not, because that's going to come into play.
Okay.
So many directly threatened, quote, the boss and his family, since Jean-Marie was in charge of 20 men. So he was the boss.
It's only 20.
Like I said, small village car part factory. That's why people are, if it's a big company, people are like, oh, who gives a shit?
Well, I just meant smaller pool of suspects.
Oh, but it could be like people in the town know he's the boss, so they go, you the boss,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was me trying to be French and I kind of came out Russian, the boss,
lay boss,
le boss, there we go, mm-hmm. but I want to say de boss, so one letter read, or one excerpt read, I'll have all your hides. I don't know what that means. I'm guessing skin. I'll have all your hides. Well, another letter stating, I hate you so much. The day you die, I will spit on your grave.
So he's expecting him to be buried same day.
No, he's just saying in general. He's
not. He said, the day you die, I'm going to spit on your grave. But sometimes it takes a few days. I don't think they throw you in. No, this is the 80s,
this
right?
This is why you couldn't be an investigator, because you just get caught up on these fucking, you're like, improper use of the word day. He should have just said the minute you die? That doesn't even make sense. Anyway, so the most recent one arrived the day after Gregory's murder. This one solidified the killer reading, I hope you die of grief, boss. Your money will not bring your son back. This is my revenge, you bastard. Which is like the most horrible thing. Yeah, exactly. It's so fucking horrible. It's like, goddamn, imagine opening that up and just like, I don't know. It's kind of like weirdly closure, because like you're like, okay, now we have like evidence. Like we could find out. Like if you've been receiving these letters for 4 years, maybe you have like a general idea of like,
oh, I missed that it was 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years.
I missed that detail.
Yeah, 4 years of receiving these letters and like phone calls. So he's like, maybe I have a general idea of who it is, but like, I mean, just to send that, and like that's it's
very bold too, to be like,
it's incriminating yourself. Mm-hmm. It's like the person who's sending these letters obviously killed the child,
and it seems like they almost like they want him to kind of know who they are.
Well, I mean, if I, you
that's
know.
How you get the notoriety, or well, I don't know if that's the right word.
No, I mean, yeah, serial killers do that a lot, but like, of course, if I broke your window, you don't want, like, somebody might be like, oh, someone broke my window, but if you know like your enemy broke your window, it's like, oh, you fucking asshole, like you got one up on me. And this is obviously much more than a broken window. So the mysterious letter writer became known to the media as the Crow, which was French slang for an anonymous letter writer, which is it was a term made popular by the 1943 film Le Corbeau de Boss. Le Corbeau, Le Corbeau.
It's Beau.
Is it Beau?
Yeah.
I wanted to say like cordon.
Cordon bleu?
Cordon Beau? I don't know why I keep. That's the only other French word I know. Croissant? Cordon bleu? No, yeah. Le Corbeau. Corbeau? Fuck.
Yes, Beau.
Jesus. It means the crow. I'm just going to stick with the crow. There's a reason I didn't take French classes in high school. So the investigator, 32-year-old Jean-Michel Lambert.
Well, this is confusing.
There's two Jeans.
Okay.
Very French.
Jean-Claude?
Don't bring up Jean-Claude. There was an Uber driver named Jean-Claude that wanted to have a threesome with Katie and I, and we did not talk about threesomes. He brought it up himself, and he got 1 star. Anyway, we could go into details later, but we just definitely went through with the threesome. So Jean-Michel Lambert, the 32-year-old investigator, was working this case as his first, which is why there were crucial errors made, like failing to secure the crime scene or a full autopsy, and even potentially vital evidence would also later be thrown out. So that's what I mean when I say I don't know if he was fully drowned or if he was strangled or what. Like, they didn't get like a full autopsy, and I just don't get how like shit like this goes down in like, how does shit like that fall through the cracks? I get it. Like,
I mean, maybe there's other things also going on, but it seems like, you know, the suspected murder of a 4-year-old would be
yeah,
at the top of the list.
I would say so. But it's just crazy. I mean, it's still a job, and like sometimes things fall through the cracks, but this is like next level. So this was a horrible start to the case, but they did catch a little break, as in November, Bernard LaRoche, a cousin of Jean-Marie, was arrested and charged with the murder. So the guy's cousin was arrested, and he was like,
so I was right with my cousin guess. Well, yeah. So far. Who yeah, knows what's so far. Gonna happen?
So you see, the handwriting experts, like I said, handwriting experts argued he had written two of the poison pen letters. I think that's what they called them. I don't think there was poison in the letter or anything like that. I think they just called them like poison pen letters. So the poison pen letters, they believed he had written two of them, and his sister-in-law, 15-year-old Muriel Bollet, told police that she had accompanied him when he drove to the Villemin's house, picked up Gregory, headed for the river, then went off with him and came back alone. She said that to the police. She's 15, and there's going to be a lot of controversy about that statement itself.
Right.
Because...
And is this, are we still 4 years later?
Yes, this is still 4 years later. Okay. So, like, yeah, this is right after Gregory was murdered. So, like I said, promotion happened 4 years ago. Ever since then, he's been receiving a lot of hate mail. And then...
Oh, I thought it's been 4 years since his murder. No. I was all kinds of mixed up.
No. Yeah.
Oh, promotion he'd been was getting years. Hate mail. Hate calls and mail?
Hate calls, and then he told the police, and that turned into hate mail.
And then, after 4 years of that, they took his son.
Yeah, they took his son.
Okay.
But like I said, the Bollet was like, oh, yeah, I was with him. He picked him up, and then he drove him to the river, and he came back alone. That totally reminds me of my dad's joke when he was like, he'll be like walking somewhere with, he tells this joke, and he's like, I'm not going to get into it. It's a too long of a joke.
But
it,
you have to now. You tease the people.
I know. It's this stupid joke where he said, like, oh, yeah, like, Alex, he always tells, like, one of my friends this. He's like, oh, when Alex and I were, when Alex and I were younger.
Technically,
yeah. So when he's like, when Alex was younger, he brought his friend, like, Kenneth out to, like, we went into the woods. And I just remember, like, Kenneth was like, he's like, me and Kenneth went off and we were walking through the woods and Alex stayed behind back of the house, and Kenneth started getting really scared, and he looked at me and he goes, hey, Kit, I'm scared. And I look back at him, I go, you're scared? I'm the one who has to walk back alone. So stupid.
Oh, how classic.
What a dark sense of humor. So,
wonder where you get it.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said, Bollet said, I saw him go into the river with this kid and come back alone. But unfortunately, 2 days later, Bollet recanted her statement and Bernard LaRoche was set free.
They're just going to set him free because she's like, just kidding. Like, obviously.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's a lot of stuff going on in the story where you go, what the fuck are you guys doing? So...
Well, like, maybe they couldn't charge him, and maybe they have, like, the 48-hour rule. I think that's a thing.
Oh, God.
Here, at least.
You should wait. There's going to be a lot of weird stuff going on.
Okay.
So this is when father of Gregory, Jean-Marie Villemin, just to clarify that, the dad, vowed in front of the press that he would kill Bernard LaRoche. So in front of the press, he's like, I'm going to kill that motherfucker.
Oh, no.
He's like,
I feel like I know where this is going.
So after LaRoche was set free, the police began to build a case against Gregory's mother, Christine.
The mom.
They're going after the mom now. So they argued that she was seen.
Technically, she did go to the river.
Well, I mean, they always go for the parents first. I mean, they thought the dad was, you know, the person. And then because they're like, oh, yeah, you weren't there. But it still doesn't make sense why they would. I mean, the mom might have done it unrelated to the phone calls, or like maybe she had somebody who was, you know, it's always that thing where like you could hire somebody or like have a close friend like make it look like it was somebody else. You know, people are smart when they're committing crimes, so I guess they have to check everybody, even if it is like in poor taste,
right?
You know, so they argue that she was seen at the post office the day the last letter was sent, and that they were 80% sure it was her handwriting. Okay, now they're just like,
fuck. 80%?
I don't say that handwriting analysts are wrong, or it's like a crock of shit or anything like that, because like I don't know anything about
it. It's also the 80s. Who knows? Like, I know that they have like, I feel like they probably have technology now that does it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like also, I think it's impressive, the guy that like used to take fingerprints and like compare them to other fingerprints. I'm like, what a fucking tedious job. Like, now we have computers to do it, but like, wow.
Yeah, that's called, I guess, being very detail oriented.
Yeah, exactly. Oh god, I could never do that. So yeah, they said 80% sure it was her handwriting, and that similar cord was used to tie Gregory's hands and feet was found in the basement. So they're like, oh yeah, like this is the same cord in the basement.
Similar is the key word there.
I don't know if it was similar, or if like, you know, if it was like so close that they couldn't say like it was the same, so they legally had to say it was a similar cord, you know what I mean? Right. But like, also, if you live in a small village and there's like one fucking store,
yeah,
like everybody has the same of everything, right?
Yeah, that would make sense.
So it's, I don't know, it's kind of weird. I think they're, that's the thing though, you kind of look for, you fill in the blanks where you want to fill in the blanks. So, this was already unbearable for Christine, but now even more since she was also 6 months pregnant.
No!
Yes, this is not good. So, as the case against Christine continued to grow, the police received a call that Jean-Marie had just turned himself in.
Oh, to get her out?
As he had just got done murdering his cousin, Bernard LaRoche, with a hunting rifle as he left work.
No!
Yeah, he just killed his cousin. Jesus. He shot her in the head.
See, I thought that somebody was going to frame him for killing the cousin. I thought...
Ow.
Careful.
Sorry. Sorry, what were you saying?
I thought that someone was going to kill that Bernard dude and then be like, oh, it was Jean-Marie.
Oh, no. I mean, that would have been a good setup, but no, Jean-Marie is like, I'm just going to do it myself. And that's what I'm talking about. When like, when you get letters for 4 years, you go, I fucking know who this is.
You know, both of his parents are in jail and his mom's pregnant. I mean, granted, if she did it.
Both of his parents, but, he's dead.
Yeah, I know, but he's dead and his parents are both in jail.
Technically, yeah, you're right. So, in custody, at least, because, like I said, he murdered his cousin with a hunting rifle, and, where am I? Oh, yeah, so Jean-Marie received 5 years in prison.
Imagine!
While his wife, Christine, was being arrested and placed in pretrial detention for the murder of her son. This is, like, the worst-case scenario, right?
But also, you kill someone and get 5 years?
Well, I think they're like, we understand the situation, and, like... Also, France is like, I mean, European countries, some of are very just like, I think 25 years is the max sentence in some of those European countries. They don't give life. Germany doesn't give life. It's 25 years. The guy who was the cannibal, I think he got like 25 years, and then he can get out like for good behavior earlier than that. They just don't believe in like life sentences over there.
I can see that.
Armin. That's, remember we talked about that guy? I don't think you listened to that one. You don't like cannibal stuff. Can you believe it? So, this is like a worst case scenario. Your child is dead, and now you're separated from your husband and wife, and you're both in prison or detention. So, Christine stayed in custody for 11 days on a hunger strike, which had inadvertently caused her to collapse and miscarry one of her twins that she was pregnant with.
Oh my god.
I know. This is what I'm talking about. It's like, it's just like fucking snowballs into horribleness.
I'm glad you didn't pick a happy story.
I know. I'm sorry. So after her collapse, she was freed after an appeals court cited flimsy evidence and the absence of a coherent motive. So Jean-Marie served only 2.5 years of his sentence, and Christine was fully cleared of all charges in 1993, 8 years later. But there was still the question of who the killer was. In 2000, the case was reopened to test DNA evidence, because I think this is when DNA evidence started to become more and more popular, you know, as we know with Golden State Killer and,
right.
and a couple other people that they've caught. But yeah, so they opened it for DNA evidence, and the licked stamp on the letter, the cord around used to bind Gregory, and Gregory's clothes and shoes were all tested, but everything came up inconclusive.
No.
Yeah. So after 17 more years of handwriting analysis over 2,000 letters and voice recordings, the police suspected that the singular crow who wrote the letters and made the calls was actually multiple crows, believing these new crows to be a man and a woman. This led to the arrest of Gregory's great aunt and great uncle, as well as an aunt, but not the uncle because he had passed away in 2010.
Aunt.
Fuck. Am I saying aunt a lot?
He said aunt.
Why am I doing this? Anyway, so like I said, great aunt, great uncle, and then an aunt and an uncle. But the uncle had passed away. So they're just trying to find like groups, like a man and a woman that were related in the family, basically. Because, like I said, they already knew too much information, so they know it's somebody very close. And they're like, who's a man and a woman that we can, like, interview for, like, you know, suspected murderer of this child? So they just started going after, like, these other people. And I think they did the handwriting analysis, too. It wasn't just, like, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, these people look like they have similar handwriting. So, like I said, the aunt was released shortly after. And the great aunt and uncle remained silent for the entirety of the detainment before they were also released, which is fucking a red flag for me.
Yeah, you have the right to remain silent.
You know what's weird? They always say, they're like,
at least here.
You know, like when a lawyer goes, yeah, you could get a lawyer, but then you look guilty, and they like manipulate the person.
I think you meant like somebody that's interrogating you. Said a lawyer.
Sorry, not a lawyer. Okay. Yeah, when a cop goes in and goes, I want a lawyer. You want a lawyer? If you get a lawyer, it makes you look guilty. Why don't you just talk to me? And you know, and I feel like it's true though, because like these people are like, I have the right to remain silent. I'm like, oh, you're guilty. You're fucking real guilty. So also Muriel Bollet, who was the girl who said she saw him go into the dead man. I can't remember his name now. LaRoche.
Bernard.
Yeah, Bernard LaRoche. She saw him go into the river with the child. She was also arrested, and she was held for 36 days before being released. And while she was in custody, though, a cousin of hers came forward and told police that she was psychologically and physically abused as a 15-year-old by her family to recant the story to the police. But Bollet stated that that was a lie. And Bollet would go on to write a book entitled Breaking the Silence, where she, in fact, blames the police for coercing her into stating it was LaRoche.
Interesting. I was going to say maybe, like, well, you know, she got to the point where she, you know, like the reality kind of changes in your head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like you believe something so hard that it becomes that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing, too. I think that's for sure happening. But it's also weird because police do that. Police are like, we just watched it a while ago, but the Henry Lee Lucas thing, the confession killer.
Right.
Police are like, so you like killed this guy, right? And he's like, yeah, I killed him. And he's like, how many miles was the body away? And he's like, I don't know. And the guy's like, the cop's like five. And he's like, yeah, like five probably, you know, like.
And then he'd get a strawberry milkshake or whatever.
He'd get a strawberry milkshake for every murder he confessed to. That's pretty cool. I'd say just keep racking up the milkshakes. But it's crazy because they do that shit and they go like, well, LaRoche probably did it. You saw him like go off with the boy and then she's 15 and like scared and impressionable. But like if the cops did, like I feel bad for this 15-year-old girl because when that LaRoche guy died, she recanted her story and then he was shot in the head. She was like, if I never said that he walked into the, like if she did lie, that guy just got murdered because she was like, the cops were like, hey, you saw him go into the woods with the kid, right? And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, you saw him go into the kids of the woods. She's like, yeah, I did. And then like Jean-Marie shoots Bernard in the head. And then she's like, he didn't. Or maybe he did. That's right. The thing. And if Jean-Marie is going to, like, shoot somebody in the head, I feel like he might be kind of confident. He must have not liked his cousin. You don't go like, oh, I think my cousin killed my son. He wouldn't have done that. There's no way he would have done that. There must have been real bad blood or some weird shit going on there.
Yeah, definitely.
So, just to wrap this up, on July 11, 2017, the magistrate in charge of the first investigation, Jean-Michel Lambert, remember the 32-year-old guy who, like, fucked up the case, kind of? He, like, lost some evidence and...
Yeah,
he committed suicide. In a farewell letter to a local newspaper, Lambert cited the increasing pressure he felt as a result of the case being reopened as the reason for ending his life. So when they... So
this is what? 30...
No, they opened it in 2000, and they opened it again in 2017.
Yeah, but it happened in, what, 84 or something,
you said? It happened in, like, 80... Yeah, 84. So in 84, it happened, and then in 2000, it got reopened, and then 2017, it got reopened for DNA, and then 2017, it got reopened because they're like, this looks like a man and a woman, so right. They need to start questioning people again. And then he's like, I can't handle this anymore, because everybody was like, you fucked up the case, and we're never going to solve it, and it's like really, really sad. And that's happened to a lot of people. There's also a guy in Tokyo, multiple people probably, I forget what the case was, I think it was the monster with 1,000 faces or something like that, and he killed himself because he couldn't solve the case too. And I'm like, man, it's so much pressure and like all that publicity towards you and everything like that, and it's just horrible. And I feel so bad for this guy, you know, he really cared about this case, and he was just young, and he messed up some stuff, but like, you know, it's not his fault completely, you know, he doesn't deserve to die over it. But, and just to end this off with a little horrible note again, Monique Villemain, Gregory's paternal grandmother, died on April 19, 2020 at the age of 88, presumably of COVID-19. So they added that in the Wikipedia. So like, why not? Let's just make this continually. It just goes to show you that like one action has a lot of consequences. Even like, I obviously this action was murder, and of course that's going to have consequences, but like this whole thing of one person's jealousy and like weirdly rash behavior of being like, I'm going to kill this person's son because that's how you really hurt somebody, ended up killing multiple people, you know, inadvertently, like people that had nothing to do with like the family and like unborn babies and like
the detective.
That's what I mean, the detective, and like some guy who might have been guilty, who might have been innocent. It's just one of those cases that like, I think that's why it's so popular in France. People are just like, how did this get so out of hand so fast, you know? And why does it keep going? Why doesn't like, I don't know how anybody in the family.
It seems like there's a decent amount of evidence, like, you know, like with the letters and stuff. Like,
yeah, is this just like interpersonal, like family? Like, this is maybe too like prying, but like, I would love to see what like those next 30 years looked like at like family. Like, they must have moved out of town. Like, living next to the people and you don't know what, like, somebody in your family murdered your 4-year-old son and you have to go to Christmas? Like, there's no way they have any connection with any family members anymore, right? You don't know. Plus, you killed your cousin. Like, regardless of anything. So it's like, what the hell's going on? Like, but maybe he did do it, and that's why they don't have this closure, because I really hope that 15-year-old girl, like, Bolle, I wish you'd just be like, okay, here's what actually happened. But, like, people get too scared when that
unravels. And it's hard too when like you go back and forth and it's like, you know, you're more unreliable, I guess.
That's true. Yeah, if she came forward and was like, okay, I did see him do that and he did murder her, people would still be like, well, how do we know? You know what I mean? And like you said, when you believe something hard enough, sometimes that takes the memory and like forms a new memory in your head. So it's very strange, super sad, but like a very interesting unsolved case. And you know, I hope one of these days they solve it. Why is that cat meowing?
I hope one of these days she is
quiet.
Is quiet.
Yeah, yeah. I, you know.
Well, thank you for that definitely Sorry. Uplifting story.
Sorry, I tend to do that. That's my thing.
Well, my story is a little
We get it. You're a cat.
Less morbid. So, Alex, or Tobin, I guess I should say.
Don't call me that.
I think the reason I had trouble originally finding news stories for the beginning segment was because the news is mainly taken up with just one thing right now.
The Olympics.
The 2020 Tokyo Olympics, which was confusing to me that they're still calling it the 2020 Olympics.
Oh, even yeah.
But they're taking place in 2021.
Well, because they can't, because then it's like, then the years get all fucked up.
Oh, the Olympiad, you mean?
Sure. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, it was like a measurement of time of 4 years. But anyway,
oh.
I didn't include that in my story. That's just a fun fact for you to start off the my part. So I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about the Olympics, maybe some little stories you haven't heard before, just to be on theme with everything that's going on right now. So just to give some backstory. The ancient Olympics began in Greece in 776 BC.
Whoa.
Long time ago.
Yeah, not that long ago.
Okay.
Wait, what did we say BC stood for again? Oh, no. I wish David was here to tell me. I don't remember much. He came up with a funny joke for BC. I can't remember. Fuck. This sucks.
Anyway. So, back then, they... I think the main first event that they had was called the Stadion.
Whoa.
Stadion, which was just a race, like a straight race running on foot.
Okay, just in a straight line?
Yeah, for 200 yards.
Easy.
So,
I'm an Olympic athlete. I could do that. Everybody's probably slow back then.
Yeah, you have to beat everybody.
Yeah, I could beat them.
Anyway.
Do you think like an average person running out? I mean, like, they're... You know what's funny? They were way stronger back then. I like how I'm assuming they're weaker. Like, the average person now could beat a Roman back then. I'm like, have you seen pictures of these fucking Romans? Everybody's ripped or extremely fat. Or a cat. Right?
Yes. But anyway, so back then, they had the Stadion race at first, and then so they had some other running events, and they also had a pentathlon, which was made up of a jumping event, discus and javelin throws, a foot race, and wrestling.
See, I get everything but discus, because javelin, you're like, oh, you have to throw a spear. Like, we've thrown spears, we've been in war. I've never seen anybody come out in a battle with a frisbee. Like, watch this shit, you know?
Grenade?
Yeah, I was gonna say rock throw would be good, but then they're just like, oh, they probably just like started rock throw, and then they're like, we should turn it into like a flat thing, because the flat thing flies further, right? But like, how do you even figure out that fucking move they do for
discus?
Yeah,
it is weird.
Do a little spin?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so they had those like athletic events, and then they also had what they call combat sports.
Hell yeah.
Which, once again, would include wrestling, but then they also had pankration?
What is that?
It was similar to mixed martial arts, so it said something like empty hand, like submissive, I don't know.
Oh, so they're just like choking each other out.
Yeah, they could choke, they could kick, they could do all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's
kind of like, yeah, do whatever you want, just like, I think there was a part, I think I read on Strange Deaths episode a while ago that some guy fucking got punched in the balls a bunch and died. I think that was like a thing. Oh, like he got his balls squeezed. Like that was kind of the thing. Like you could kind of do whatever you wanted. You know, you just like gouge someone's eye. You could like grab their balls and squeeze. And I think some guy had a heart attack because he grabbed his balls and squeezed. Welcome to the Olympics.
Thank you for that addition.
You're welcome.
Oh, and then they also used to compete naked, which it didn't start like that. From
Whoa.
What I read.
Grab balls and squeeze, right?
They would have loincloths on, but then as the, you know, lore goes, which a lot of this ancient Olympic history is kind of like, you know.
It's hearsay. right?
They have like etchings and things and whatever.
Orators,
but,
Homer, yeah. All of them.
So apparently some guy was like going to run his race and he just like took it off, or he said his like it fell off, but really he just thought it was easier to run naked.
Yeah.
But then other sources say that they did it as a tribute to Zeus, so
the naked show, or the loincloth?
Naked, to naked, show oh, okay. that they were like strong and powerful.
Oh, I see. Because the loincloth was more of like a diaper. Not like a, I always picture like a Schmeagle loincloth, you know, like the thing that just kind of...
Like a flap?
Yeah.
That's like, what I was picturing.
No, but like if you're running with that, like what's the point? You know what I mean? It's got to be like a connected diaper type situation though. Because if you've seen the show Spartacus, they kind of got like diapers on. They got a little diaper thing going. It was a diaper race.
Yeah, exactly. So they had, they were naked for a little while. And then in 393 AD... It all came to an end when the emperor at the time, Theodosius the first decreed
the only.
There was a second.
Fuck.
decreed that all pagan cults and practices be eliminated. So that's when they say that the Olympics came to an end.
I love praying to a false god, like a little figure, you know, like a pagan god, right?
I don't really know what it means.
I think a pagan god is like...
I think this was kind of when like the Romans were like taken over or something. But, I'm not an expert. I just read a few articles and now I'm telling you guys about it.
Pagini is a car manufacturer. Okay. Is a term used, paganism is a term used for the 4th century by early Christians for people of the Roman Empire who practiced polytheism. So it's when you pray to multiple gods.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, Theodosius wanted that to be Gonzo.
He was like, we have one god. Dunzo, he's a loving god. And everyone's like, but what about Zeus and Hades and the water god? And everyone's like, no. And then he's like, what about the god of wine and sex? And everyone's like, he can stay. He's our new one god. And then everyone's like, yay, I could get behind this.
Exactly. So Olympics were dead, basically. Apparently there might have been a few over time, but once again.
Like secret Olympics in like the back of a
just
McDonald's.
Just like low-key ones, like.
Like just like a go behind the bathhouse and squeeze my balls and call it the Olympics.
Exactly. And then if you fast forward to the 1600s in England, then there were some Olympic happenings beginning to go on, but they weren't the Olympics we know today until.
Wait, Simone wasn't there?
Not the time. You know how I feel about this.
I'm saying she's in the Olympics.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying, like, you're like, they're not the same as they are today. I'm like, wait, they didn't have, like, 4'8" girls just flipping through the air 40 times and landing? Like, it's crazy what the Olympics are today.
It's true.
It's bananas.
Well, I'll tell you some of what they used to do.
Okay.
If you stay tuned.
Oh, I'm here.
So, then in 1890... Baron Pierre de Coubertin created the International Olympic Committee, which is still around today, the IOC. And they were going to have their first Olympic Games in 1900, but everybody was so excited, so they tried to push it up. So they pushed it to 1896. So that's the first official modern Olympics.
Oh, that's like, I mean, so when they go like, this is the blank anniversary, how many Olympics deep are we?
I think we're on, I just looked it up, I should have written it down, like 33, the 33rd Olympiad, 34th.
What?
It's every 4 years.
I thought it's every 2 years.
Well, but I think it used to be every four. The Winter Games are a newer edition.
Okay.
Is X in Roman numerals 10?
Yeah.
Then I think it's, 30-something.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Football. Super Bowl. X. X. X.
Tentacion.
Yes, him too. Can't keep my balls in my pants.
Is that a reference?
Yeah, it's one of his songs, but he doesn't say balls.
Okay.
I'm just really into the Olympics right now.
So yes, the first Olympic Games was in 1896 in Athens, of course. Where else would it be?
That's the OG spot.
Yeah, so there were 14 nations that participated, and they sent 241 athletes and competed in 43 events.
Okay, that's more than I thought.
Yeah, and to give some context, the current Tokyo Games have...
Oh, fuck, there's a cat that just jumped up here. Okay, I'm just going to hold it right here.
It's going to freak
out. Is cat catching one of them? Because okay, you're not going up there. Stop it. Geez. This thing is crazy.
Okay, and then, so the current Tokyo Games have 11,326 athletes from 205 countries and 339 events.
I'm not sure I followed that. That was a lot of numbers.
There's a lot more now than there were back then.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, for sure.
So with all of this going on right now, just thought I'd share a few little stories and fun facts about the Olympics. And built-in drinking game, if you're of age and not driving or at work.
No, driving.
Take a drink every time I say Olympics.
Or balls.
Okay. I don't think I'm not going to say it a lot.
Oh, no. I'll pick up the slack.
All right. So, we're going to fast forward to the 2002 Winter Games.
Great year.
In Salt Lake City. And
I remember that Olympics.
I don't.
I do. I was in fifth grade. Fifth.
I was in first.
That was a big Olympics. Oh my fucking God. I remember what we did. I might have been in fourth grade. I remember.
Yeah, you were in fourth.
We had Olympic Games in our classroom, and one of the things we had to do, I won a gold medal. It was potato ice skating.
What does that mean?
That means we dressed up a potato like an ice skater, and we stuck paper clips in the bottom of it to look like it had ice skates on it, and then we put it on strings, and then they put like tin foil in a big circle, and they made it look like an ice skating rink, and then we had to like kind of like do like cool tricks and stuff, and I won a gold in potato ice skating. They put googly eyes on it.
What?
And then I made like a potato skateboard or a snowboard. It was really cool. It was really cool.
My boy, the gold medalist. I've never been prouder.
That's when the first Olympics started.
Right.
Don't fucking lie.
Anyway, so back to Salt Lake City and back to the men's speed skating short track quarterfinals. So speed skating seems like they got five people competing at a time.
And one of them has to be Apollo Ohno, correct?
Just wait another sentence.
Oh, he's always there. That guy doesn't age.
So there was an Australian who this story is primarily about. His name's Stephen Bradbury, and he was up against the defending world champion from Canada, Mark Gagnon.
That sounds about right.
As well as, of course, Apollo Anton Ohno.
Apollo Ohno! Whoa.
And, you know, of course, he was a host country favorite.
Of course. Always a favorite.
So this is the quarterfinals, and only the top two would qualify for the semifinals. So to give some context on Bradbury, this is, like, I think his fourth Olympics. He's kind of old for the sport. He's the second oldest.
Competing.
And, you know, I feel like he's just happy to be there.
Yeah. Just, like, give me the long helmet and the fucking longer skate.
Yeah, so.
See how long those skates are? They got, like, 14 wheels on each foot.
Wheels?
They got, like, what? Oh, fuck.
It's ice.
Oh, he does the rollerblading one, too, I think.
I don't know about that, but okay. Definitely ice.
Well, it's like Shaun White. Games. You know how, like, he goes from snowboard to skateboard? Well, you can mix it up. It's the same movement.
Sure. So, Bradbury gave it his all in the quarterfinals, but ended up in third. So, he's one position out from making it to the semis.
Who got first? It's Apollo, right?
I think it was. Him and the Canadian world champion, Mark Gagnon, were one and two.
Okay.
However, this is where Bradbury's luck starts. So, Gagnon was disqualified for obstructing another racer.
Well, I thought that was like a part of like Murder Ball, you know, just like.
I don't know how it works. I don't make the rules. Anywho, so Bradbury made it to the semifinals.
Oh.
Very exciting.
And also, like, he's going up against a god. That boy was born to be in the Olympics. His name's Apollo.
Yeah. So, they.
That's not a Greek god. Is that a Roman? Oh, shit. Google.
You gonna look it up?
I'm not gonna talk to Google. Wait. Apollo is a Olympian deity? Apollo is one of the Olympian deities in classical Greek and Roman religion.
Well, then he was really made for it.
Holy shit, boy.
Is that his birth name?
The national divinity of the Greeks, Apollo, has been recognized as a god of archery, music, and dance, truth and prophecy, healing and disease, the sun and light, poetry and more.
So yo, many things.
Yo, not only, not skating though, that's fucked up.
It says and more.
He should have been an archer.
So, Bradbury, like I said, older guy, happy to be there. He knew that he couldn't keep up with the other skaters in the semifinals, so he and his coach strategized for him to stay at the back of the pack with the rationale that if just two of the front runners fell, he could pass them by, still have a top three finish.
Oh, no. I mean, oh, yay. I have a feeling.
So, in the semifinals, he was in last place, and wouldn't you know, three of the racers fell. And he was able to pass the fourth person, so he got first place in the semifinals.
Holy shit, did he jump him? Like, Brink?
Well, I was watching some races, and it looks like when they fall, they kind of slide to the outside of the rink just because of how, like, their momentum is going.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, shit, I might have seen that video.
Well, I think it's probably the next.
Oh. Oh.
Anyway. So, then it was time for the finals, of course. And, you know, I don't know much about speed skating. I don't follow it super closely, but I feel like the odds of that happening, everyone falling in front of you so that you can win, it seems low enough that you wouldn't really want to count on it as your primary strategy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it worked once, and he advanced to the final, which was very unexpected, so...
Also,
props to him.
Also, I have to ask really quick, are you a summer or a winter Olympics person?
Summer.
I'm winter, I think.
Well, we don't even really watch it. But,
no, we don't, but if I had to choose.
I'm a women's gymnastics and volleyball kind of gal, so.
Yeah, and I'm a potato skater.
Exactly.
Okay, and a ball squeezer. Oh, that's probably easier.
That's summer.
Easier or harder? Yeah, I guess you're right. That would be summer.
Or are you a cash braer? Summer games.
I'm a cash money millionaire. little Wheezy, baby.
Yeah. shout out Wheezy, I guess.
Free Wheezy.
Where is he?
He was in prison.
I don't think he is anymore, is he?
No.
Okay.
But I just like saying it. I have a shirt from 2005.
No, you don't.
Nope.
So, then the final race begins. So this one's for all the marbles, or shall I say, I guess, medals.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not all of them, just one.
Well, there's three.
Yeah, but you don't get all of them. You get one.
That's correct.
Unless you're Michael Phelps, then you get all of them.
Mm-hmm. So, the race begins. Our boy Ono is back, along with three other athletes.
Losers.
Also great. No, they're great also.
Yeah, they're not listening to this podcast.
Two of them actually fell in that semifinal where Bradbury ended up beating them. But
jeez.
Whatever.
Apollo would never.
He did.
Oh, they tripped him.
So, I lost my spot.
All I'm saying is, like, Apollo is, like, such a nice guy. He doesn't want to make people feel bad. So, he'll dive. He'll be like, you know what? Like, they're all going down. I don't want to be, like, the dick. Like... But, like, Bradbury's like, yeah, sure, I'll just, yeah.
The race starts. And, of course, Bradbury is trailing behind. He's just right behind them. He's not too far back. And guess what happened?
Apollo took off his skate and started stabbing everybody. Oh, he's crazy. He's got that god blood. No, what happened? I'm guessing people fell.
All four of the competitors crashed. It's fell. Like, it's slid like, out of the way.
It's like NASCAR or like a Tour de France, the lady holding a cardboard sign. You know, once one of them falls, it's pretty easy to knock the rest down. They get all
domino effect for sure.
For sure.
So Bradbury went on by and ended up bringing home Australia's first gold medal from a Winter Olympics.
What? How long have they been in the games?
They just haven't gotten the gold. I mean, it's Australia. It's probably call pretty me, warm there.
Yeah, but call me when it's Jamaica. Bobsled team, you know? Mm-mm. Oh, God. She's never seen the movie Cool Runnings with John Candy.
Never heard of it.
Oh, shut up.
Never heard of that.
I'm going to karate chop you.
So, this was obviously a big deal for Australia. They were real excited. First gold medal from a Winter Olympics. And, you know, it was just a crazy race altogether. And they like to say that this is like, of course, this happens to Australia. That everyone else falls and this guy just wins.
Hell yeah. So, especially, I like how people don't call that strategy. That's fucking strategy.
Yeah, so he turned into an example of an underdog who never gave up and succeeded because of it. And apparently this has even made its way into the Australian vernacular, because doing a Bradbury means having an unexpected or unusual success. You can even use it as a verb and say Bradburied. I tried to think of an example when I was writing this and I couldn't think of anything.
I've been Bradburied. Like that?
Well, you really Bradburied that hot dog eating contest.
Like when you get all positive marks on your STD test, like they're like, it's positive, and you're like, yeah, passed, like good.
You really Bradburied.
Yeah, Bradburied. Like you have all of them. I'm like, oh yeah, positive. Positive, so good. Positive means plus. Plus means add. Add means money.
Speaking of money, they paid him $20,000 to use his face on a stamp.
What?
In Australia, yeah. So
that's pretty sick, though.
Well, he didn't have much money before, so he used it to buy a car because his car had, like, broken down.
Shut the fuck up. What? Yeah. I love Bradbury now. Yeah. He was just skating everywhere. Wait, why did Australia take better care of your heroes? I mean,
well, he wasn't really much. I mean, he was like, he had some medals before, I think, but you know. Well,
why is he struggling to get a car?
That's why.
I mean, that's me. That's not Olympic Bradbury.
He spends all his money on probably skating lessons. I don't know.
He spends all his. He doesn't
spend money on his coaches.
He spends all his money on waiting lessons. Just wait. Oh, they fell. Go.
It is a fun video if you want to watch it. It's literally on like after. It's like the last turn, and they all fall, and then he just goes by.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
And then two of them like crawl to the finish line as fast as they can.
They like slide. Yeah, everyone's just kind of sliding. Oh man.
That's the video I was watching when you walked by earlier.
Oh, okay. I get why you don't want me to see that.
I just didn't want to spoil my story for you. So, my next little mini story, also Winter Olympics, also not that long ago, 2014, Sochi.
Great year. I was still doing Potato Olympics. Yes, I was in high school. No, I was in college. Whoa. Okay. Yeah, Potato. Yeah, still doing it.
So there was a British violinist by the name of Vanessa May.
No, that's not in the Olympics. That's not a sport.
And she made her Olympic debut at the age of 35 in the women's giant slalom event. So skiing.
Okay, wait. Is the slalom the thing where you go flying? That's long jump, huh?
No, this is the one where you have to like go around the little like poles.
Shut the fuck up. That one looks the most dangerous. I've seen people catch their ski in like that, in that orange mesh plastic, and like break their leg. Like their leg goes the opposite way. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. What?
I just like to watch you and see how much you struggle to keep saying things.
Well, I'll keep going.
I know you will.
I have no shortage of words in my brain. Not all of them are very good, but I'll keep talking.
So, anywho, Vanessa May, she lived in Britain, but her What, you didn't like how I said that?
Britain. So. Hello, love. In it.
So, but her dad was from Thailand, or at least Thai descent. So she was able to represent Thailand because it'd be really hard to get into the, like, onto the British team because there's just a lot more people, whereas, like, Thailand didn't have very many high-level skiers.
So you just have to be a citizen, correct? Or residency, or what is it called when you get the, I have a dual residency or whatever?
Dual citizenship.
Citizenship, yeah, that's it.
Maybe, I'm not exactly sure on the legality of it, but.
Because I don't want to be controversial here, but like, did she look Thai?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I always think it would be weird if somebody's like, I feel you have to be born in the country to compete for them, right?
No, I don't think so.
Because it would be really interesting. I don't really know if they'd be like one of these.
Well, I'm
like,
not sure where she was born, but Naomi Osaka was playing tennis for Japan.
Oh, okay.
She's American.
Oh, really?
Hmm?
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Nastia Lukin, I think. Oh no, somebody else. Someone represented Russia.
Because like, there's these countries that are more like melting pots.
Oh,
like,
Maria Sharapova. On the Russian team, I think.
That makes sense. Well, I'm just saying that there's, like, these countries that are melting pots where, like, you see, like, a lot of different cultures, like, competing in the Olympics. And then you see, like, a tiny country, it would be, like, Botswana in it. And then, like, it would be crazy to see, like an Asian guy in, like, Botswana. He's like, oh, I was technically born in Botswana. And everyone's like, well, I guess, yeah, he's Botswanan. Botswanan. Is Botswana a country?
Yeah. I don't know if they're at the Olympics. I'm not sure. I haven't seen them.
How dare you say that? They're the best country at the Olympics.
Well, okay.
For all my Botswanans out there.
So.
That are also Asian. What's up?
So, she's going to be representing Thailand in the slalom, but she needed to reach a certain number of points in order to, like, qualify for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently, in this event, it's kind of like golf scoring, so you had to have a score of 140 or lower.
Oh, is it when you hit a pole?
No clue.
That's fair.
I didn't look that far into it.
That's the hardest part with all these Olympic sports. Like, every time you're like, okay, I hope the commentator starts, like, giving the rules out, like, every 5 minutes, because if I tune in at the wrong point, I'm mm-hmm. like completely, you know, that like they just got to go on the other side of the flag, but you know, the scoring is just all over the place.
Yeah, so she needed 140 or fewer, but there were like, I guess, no upcoming events or something, and it was kind of last minute. So the Thailand Olympic Committee put together a race in Slovenia.
I believe you.
And on January 11th, before the race, she had almost 270 points.
She needed 140 or fewer?
Yeah.
So she hit a lot of poles, I'm guessing.
What it means to me is she wasn't ready for the Olympics.
Mm.
But 8 days later, after this 2 day race, she had 131 points.
Oh, she cut that score down. Maybe she had an off day, you know? She was 35, though.
Maybe, yeah.
Wow. Good for her. That's so fucking cool.
So, 2 weeks later, she had another competition, and that raised her score to 171, but it was fine, apparently, because I guess you just had to have one that was 140 or lower once again.
Just to show your material, you know? Your Olympic material.
Yeah.
You're not going to embarrass. You're not going to, like, show up and then get, like, 400, and everyone's like, why the fuck did they let him in?
But it was weird that her score was kind of jumping all over the place. Shows some maybe inconsistencies.
You're right. That is kind of a red flag.
So.
No pun intended, because they have red flags in the sport.
So she was able to represent Thailand, and there were 90 skiers on this event at the Olympics. She placed 67th, but the 23 that were behind her didn't actually finish the event.
What?
So, like you said, I don't know, people get hurt, people fall over, I don't know.
They fall over and then they got that long, slow slide down the hill. So she was the last one to do officially.
Or maybe they, like, missed some, maybe there's, like, rules.
They
like
got disqualified, disqualified. Yeah, okay.
So she was last of all the people that, like, finished the race. Anywho, so this sparked a lot of questions. And after almost a year of investigations, the International Ski Federation found that the Slovenia qualifying race was fraudulent in, like, many capacities.
Oh, no.
So they had a retired skier attend, which basically was to raise everybody else's scores, or I guess lower their scores.
Yeah, since we're set a bar.
In golf talk. Yeah, so then, like, you know, they look like they're doing better, but they just have, like, you know, some old person following them.
Yeah.
And then three of the athletes that were given times weren't even there.
What?
And then this was confusing, but it said that the weather was apparently so bad that no regular race could be held. So it's a little bit confusing if there even... I assume there was a race, but one of, like, the referees or officials or whatever was like, yeah, the weather was really bad. This would have been canceled for any other race.
Oh, shit.
So very weird.
The Kroger brand race.
Yes. Mm. So Vanessa May ended up being banned from competitive skiing for 4 years.
Now she can't race until she's 38.
Well, she's 35, so technically be 39, I think.
40, basically.
Yeah. So
in her prime.
And then five officials from Slovenia and Italy, I guess they were both there at that race, they were banned for their roles in this scandal. So it was really just a hot mess all around. And basically she shouldn't have been at the Olympics.
That's so cool, though.
That she got to go to the Olympics and it was, like, kind of fixed for her.
But, like, also at the same time, like, what about those fucking people that didn't even finish the race? They got beat by a fraud.
True.
Those people must feel bad.
So, I do have to put a disclaimer out there that her ban was lifted, as they didn't have any evidence that she had any kind of a role or was even aware of the scandal. So she was given a settlement and a public apology by the International Skiing Federation.
What? They and gave then, her and money? Then she
tried, yeah, because it was like defamation suit.
Whoa.
So she, and then she tried to qualify for 2018, but ended up hurting her shoulder the year before.
Opening up a jar of pickles.
I assume probably skiing, but who knows? I mean, she's 39, so.
Yeah, that's
could be anything.
That's tough. That's tough.
And then, I mean, to wrap it up here, I just have a couple of small things. This quick one, piece. When I was just looking up, you know, strange things involved with the Olympics, this one was kind of funny to me. After the 1936 Olympics, Liechtenstein, which is a country.
I thought it was Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein. Stein. It was in the first Baby Geniuses, if you didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I usually fall asleep during it.
No, those are the third and fourth ones with John Voight. Those ones were... You guys ever want to have a good time, get high, and watch the third and fourth Baby Geniuses on Amazon, I think. They're fucking horrible and amazing.
So, after the 1936 Olympics, Liechtenstein...
There we go.
...had to change their flag because they realized they had the same flag as Haiti. So two countries with the same flag didn't even know it.
Oh, shit.
Until they were at the Olympics.
When you show up at the club and the girl wear the same dress.
Exactly.
Yo, somebody got changed.
But I mean, like, but it they is a very...
Been,
what?
They could have been like the guys wearing the same shirt and they became best friends.
Yeah, they weren't into
no
that.
Rivalry, you know, just best friends.
So it's a really simple flag. It's just like a blue, like half the top half, I think, is blue and the bottom is red. And then Liechtenstein just added a crown to it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Just add a little crown to it. They had to change the whole nation's flag. I wonder if they, like, Rochambeau, like, who's going to change it?
Well, it looked like Haiti also added something. They have, like, a something in the middle of their flag also.
That's what you do. You both add something.
Yeah. And then my last thing, I was just going to share some notable events in Olympic history, if you're curious about that.
Hit me with some notables.
Okay, well, don't read it first.
I'm trying not to, but, like, I just want to. Come on.
So, by far, the strangest one was the 1900 Olympics. So, that was the second Olympiad of the modern Olympics. It took place in Paris. They really went crazy with the events. So some of those were live pigeon shooting.
Shut up.
Over 300 pigeons were killed.
Anti-pigeon, but... Oh, we're anti-seagull. I'm kind of like...
We saw a dead pigeon yesterday.
Yeah. Won a gold.
Got hit by a car.
We don't know that.
Well, it was in the road. Anyway, and then they also had a swimming obstacle course. So they had to, like, go under boats and, like...
Whoa!
Around, like, yeah. I assume it's, like, small.
You know, that would be cool? Italy. Like, Venice.
Well, they were in Paris.
So. I know. I'm just saying, like... Like, that seems like...
The gondolas?
Yeah, like, go under a gondola. You had to, like, run through a cannoli shop. Like, you have to, like...
That's not swimming.
No, but it's an obstacle course. Like, you gotta, like, run through... It's like a Jason Bourne movie. You know, you gotta run through, like, a shop and, like, roll over a table, grab a cannoli, eat it, dive back into the water. There's dolphins back because of COVID. And, you know, all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all that fun stuff.
Spider-Man shows up.
And then also in 1900, they had poodle clipping.
Shut the fuck up.
Trimming up, grooming a poodle.
Just poodles?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
1900.
Okay. I'll give them a pass. They didn't know what sports were back then.
Yeah.
They're all trying to just not get polio or something, right?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A few others. Tug of war.
Hell yeah.
I know. Should still be one, really. They also had dueling pistols, but
whoa,
they were shooting at a plaster dummy in like a sport coat.
That's sick.
With a target on like its face or chest or something.
I mean, they still have that image is going around.
How is it dueling if I guess two people could be shooting at two dummies at the same time?
I thought dueling.
Well, duel means two. No?
Yeah, maybe they had like something on like the. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, that was in 1906. So, and it wasn't an official games. It was like an in-betweener.
Yeah, it was like the school fair, and you showed up and like dueling pistols, and then you won, and you got.
And
like
then you go to the kissing booth.
Wait, what? You go to the kissing booth?
What? I live at the kissing booth.
Fuck you. I work at the kissing booth.
Okay.
You're kissing me.
Got it.
Wow. She loves me, guys. She really does. I get paid to be at the kissing booth.
Anyway.
It's just your hobby.
dork. There was horse long jump and high jump, which I didn't think was that crazy, but everybody on the internet thought it was weird since it's not really a human doing anything. It's like a horse doing it.
Yes. Yeah. It's not. Oh, don't they have like.
But there's horse races.
Don't they have like. Is that an Olympic sport? Like
equestrian?
Dressage?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Like polo,
but the thing is, the human's still doing something. I guess if you're racing, you're doing the same thing as like a long jump. But like
I wonder how they measured the high jump. Well, I guess there was something. I'm stupid. I was picturing it like okay, no.
Just the poles.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's okay.
I just pictured a horse jumping in the air and like trying to get a measuring tape out.
What? Like you know, like when people do it and they like do it on their back over the pole.
Yeah.
I want to picture a horse doing that.
Yeah, that'd be
and
cool.
Then it misses the mat.
Oh, no.
And then they just start making glue.
Okay. No, like dog food.
Yeah. That too. Yeah. horse meat's tasty, though.
Hot air ballooning. Also an event.
That's not an event. I won't stand for that. You can't even control that thing. I still don't know how people control that thing.
I don't understand it either. And I didn't really see what they were racing for. Highest, longest. Do they have to go far, I guess?
Prettiest screensaver.
Yes.
You know, like they take the picture and mm-hmm. It's always like the screensaver. And they're like, Napa Valley, balloon racing. Come, oh, the guy got caught up in some wires in the sky.
My favorite is that, like, on The Bachelor or, like, even on Love Island, like, those kinds of shows, they'll always have a hot air balloon date. Like, you got a view, but you're also there with, like, a strange, most likely man that's just, like, throwing fire.
I guess I'm just gonna cancel ours then. I'm sorry. I don't. That'd be so scary. Just be in the basket. I'd do it, but I'd be
it
like, is,
it does seem scary. I'd be down for it for a day, but I just they always do that on the shows.
I'd be like, can I get like a parachute on my back? Like, I don't know how to operate it, but like, I need something just in case this basket breaks. Right?
Yeah, plan B.
Yeah.
And then they also had town planning. So it was architectural design contest.
All them Freemasons coming out of the woodwork trying to build their triangle streets and shit like that.
It was very strange, but yeah. That was one that I thought really just didn't fit in. That and poodle clipping were probably my two faves.
I like all the architects coming out and being like, we're athletes.
Yeah.
We're athletes. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and some of the current ones that people think are just loco.
What's that?
Crazy.
No, I know what the word loco means. What are the current ones that people think are loco?
Speed walking.
What? That's one?
Yeah.
Also, I just realized that the city planning one, that like, you know that they just like fucking just, they're like, oh, here's a competition. And then basically when they're done, they fucking stole all their plans and built cities and stuff like that.
I once again, didn't read enough, but they, like, whoever got silver, they didn't even end up using it. I think they used maybe
only gold. There's only so many cities, Katie.
There's a lot of cities. If there's only one,
it's only so many.
Anyway, so speed walking and then steeplechase. People have a real bugaboo with steeplechase.
I still don't even notice. The only
they
reason
they jump over a barrier and then land in water.
All I have to say is this: here's the church, here's the people. Open the doors. And there's all the steeples.
That's how it goes.
I don't know what a steeple is.
Like,
it's a part of a roof, right? They're like, here's the church, here's the steeple, and you do your fingers, and I keep poking that. But that's not me, that's the steeples. And you open the doors, and there's all the people. I'm guessing a steeple holds up a roof? Okay, here we go, Google. What the fuck is a steeple? Steeple! Steeplechase. Oh, it came up steeplechase. I didn't mean to do that.
No. Oh, is that what I said? Now I feel like I said the wrong word.
Oh, it's a pointy thing on a church or like a...
Oh, like the top.
Or like a Halloween town or something.
Oh, a steeple is a tall tower on a building topped by a spire.
Wow, look at that. That's fun. So they gotta jump over those?
No.
Okay. But yeah, a lot of weird sports out there, huh? You doing chase now? Steeplechase?
Yeah, I didn't know if...
Well, show me an image of that.
They just jump over.
Oh, that's the thing where they fall in the water.
Yeah, why are they doing it?
I don't know, but I see high school kids really bad at it. I've seen like kids like eat shit a bunch of times in their very funny videos. That's one that I could get into, though. It's fun. That one looks cool.
It does seem fun, but I guess when you're racing other people, it's probably less fun.
Yeah, what's the... It's like... It's a...
You're doing...
Lunge, not lunge.
I cannot fucking think of the word.
Lunge.
What is it when you jump over the hurdles?
Luge. It is hurdles.
Yeah, not luge.
Luge. You could luge under a hurdle.
You could.
You could. Yeah, it's a hurdle with a puddle after it.
Exactly.
That's cool. Wow.
That's all I got.
That is a weird one, though. That's a good one to end on. That's a fun one. Apollo would be great at that, probably, too. Anyway, and I think that's our sign-off. If you guys haven't heard it all podcasts, our cats are calling us home. So I just want to say thank you guys for listening and staying and keeping us entertained as we entertain you. And thank you, Katie, for coming on and helping with the podcast once again.
Thank you for having me. It's been the time of my life.
She's not forced to do this. I didn't force her to do this, but maybe I did. But thank you guys so much. We'll be back in 2 weeks like we are normally, and hopefully David will have finally unpacked everything and has Wi-Fi and electricity. He has electricity. But like I said, thank you guys so much. If you guys want any more information, follow us at Camp Strange Podcast on Instagram and click the hyperlink. We got all this stuff there. We got merch. And if you want to send us an email, send it to campstrangepodcast@gmail.com and rate, review, subscribe wherever you do that shit. And yeah, we'll keep the fun stories coming, whether they be Olympics or child murder. But yeah, we'll keep it going. So thank you guys so much. Katie, do you have anything to say before we head out?
Nope.
Doot doodaloot doot.
Apologies for all the meows in the background, but hey, maybe that's fun. Maybe you're into that.
Yeah, maybe you like a little cat meow every once in a while. I know I do. Except for when I'm trying to fucking record the podcast. Anyway, don't forget to stay strange.